How is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me,
the genes of you and me,
we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.
Hello, you're listening to DNA Today, a genetics podcast and radio show. I'm your host, Kira Dineen. On this show, I explore genetics and how it impacts our health through conversations with leaders in genetics. These are genetic counselors, researchers, doctors, patient advocates, and many others. I want to start out the show wishing you all a very happy new year and decade. I'm really excited about the guests coming on DNA Today in 2020. I have international guests, like in this episode, fellow genetic podcasters also in this episode, and that's part of my crossover series that I started last year. And I have a really fascinating new series that's going to launch in April of this year. And it's an area of genetics that I've been intrigued by for a while, but you'll have to wait to hear more details on that. In this first episode of 2020, I am joined by genetic counselor Matt Burgess. He built one of Australia's most successful genetic counseling private practices in Melbourne. Matt provided versatile genetic counseling services using his broad scope of knowledge, including hereditary cancer, neurogenetics, prenatal genetics, adult, pediatric, and cardiac genetics. Pretty much covers most of subspecialties of genetics. And he earned a graduate degree in genetic counseling from the University of Newcastle and a master's of applied positive psychology at the University of Melbourne. He is currently a clinical science liaison at Baylor Genetics, and his name might sound familiar if you listen to other genetic podcasts. He is the host of Demystifying Genetics, which you can search for in your podcast app. Wherever you listen to this, I'm sure the podcast is also on there, so you can take a listen if you haven't already. And as I said earlier, this episode is part of my crossover series with other genetic podcasts. Thank you so much, Matt, for coming on the show, and I'm excited to talk about you being an Australian genetic counselor. I don't think I've had one on the show before who is now practicing in the US, so thanks so much for joining the show.
No, thank you for having me. I am very excited.
And a fellow genetic counseling podcaster. There's not too many of us out there.
I know. It's really exciting. I feel really honored.
Yeah, we've known each other for a bit, but we actually ran into each other at NSGC, and we're like, why have we not done an episode together? So here we are finally doing it.
It's so funny when you meet up with the people that you've like tweeted or you've kind of known online. Like, it's really cool.
Yeah, I think that was most of my NSGC experience, was just walking around and being like, oh my gosh, I know them from Twitter. Like, they probably don't know I exist, but that's really cool. And then you kind of approach each other and it feels like online dating, but then in person when you see the person and you're like trying to figure it out. So it's a cool experience.
My colleagues were honestly like looking at me thinking, what is he doing? But I looked at you and I thought, I think that's Kira, but she's got to hand over her name badge. And I was
poorly placed.
I was looking at you for about 2 minutes before I realized it really was you. So yeah, kind of weird.
Good eye. And that's why the show is happening. And I kind of want to start with you giving us a bit of a snapshot of Australian genetic counseling. I mean, how many genetic counselors are there? How many programs do you have?
Yeah, so I became a genetic counselor. I did my training about 15 years ago. And at that time, there were 4 schools in Australia where you could do genetic counseling, which kind of seems kind of crazy. Whereas now there are 2. So Melbourne, the University of Melbourne is sort of the course that has been running the longest. And there's a course in Sydney at the University of Technology, Sydney, and it started about a year ago. So we have about 300, between 300 and 350 genetic counsellors in Australia and New Zealand.
So that's a pretty good number for population sizes. I don't know if you have a number off the top of your head of how many genetic counselors there are per patient. I don't think I even know that for the US. I did at one point in time.
Look, you know what? I am an author on a paper where I did look up those stats.
Oh, no way. Well, we'll link to it then.
Now you put me on the spot. I can't quite remember what they are.
I did. That was quite a curveball. We will link to that paper so people can go to dnapodcast.com and click on the link to find the answer. So now we've given the listeners homework there. So are a lot of the Australian genetic counselors then trained also in Australia, or do you have some that are really like trained elsewhere and move to Australia, or say they are Australian, they go somewhere else for their master's in genetic counseling, come back? Like, what is that, a normal thing, or what does it look like?
I mean, I must just declare that I'm a little bit biased, but I think that our training and our certification program in Australia is excellent. So we do have a certification process that allows people from overseas, like overseas trained genetic counsellors, to work in Australia and New Zealand. And it kind of just depends on what your experience is and what your training is and sort of where you're up to with your certification to what you have to do with the Board of Censors, or, you know, the board in Australia.
And I remember hearing that a couple of the genetic counselors in Singapore, at least one of them, was trained in Australia, and maybe she also is Australian. And so it seems like that really is the case, that Australian has really, really good programs and people end up going elsewhere sometimes to continue their career.
Yeah, so the genetic counselling community, so the Australasian Society of Genetic Counsellors, so I should just define Australasian because it confuses people here in America, but Australasian is a term that means Australia and New Zealand.
I never knew that. That makes way more sense now. Thank you.
Yeah, so the Australasian Society of Genetic Counsellors is celebrating its 25th anniversary this year. So we've been around for quite a long time. And although genetics has been around in Asia for a long time as well, they don't have a board in Asia currently that certifies genetic counsellors. So a lot of practicing genetic counsellors in Asia have done their training elsewhere and choose to be certified through Australia.
Wow, that's really interesting. I didn't understand like how that works. That makes sense, though, if you can have one kind of bigger board and body together organization to be able to like create those standards in the field.
Yeah. And a couple of years ago, I went to so there's a genetic counseling a group that have just started a few years ago in Asia. And because they've got their first genetic counseling program that opened in Manila in the Philippines. So I think as they train more people, they probably will put together their own certification program. But a lot of people, or the genetic counselors at the moment, are choosing to become certified, and they look at their options sort of internationally. And it's quite hard to sit the board exam in America if you haven't done an American program, whereas in Australia you can sit the exam if you've done training elsewhere, or you can become board certified if you've trained elsewhere.
Wow, that's really cool that there's that flexibility there with it. And so in Australia, what are the main areas of practice? Would you say it's similar to the US of having like a lot of cancer, prenatal, peds being kind of our trio, or is it a little different?
Yeah, I think very similar. You know, although I'm living and working in America, I'm still sort of learning sort of the lay of the land and how things work here. But, you know, I think that it's probably similar to what's happening here. You know, maybe 20, 30 years ago, cancer genetic counseling wasn't such a big thing, and it was more prenatal. Whereas now I would say, you know, cancer probably represents maybe 40% or 50% of the genetic counseling that happens in Australasia. But yeah, cancer, prenatal, general, it's sort of the common areas.
And how is the health system in terms of patients being able to navigate that? And is insurance coverage similar to America? I mean, I'm sure you're still learning a lot, and as I am in school, with insurance and just hospital structures, is it like starkly different, or it's like, oh, okay, it's just similar?
Completely different.
Completely different. Oh, yeah. So you must be kind of like, oh my gosh, I have to learn so much in the US.
Yeah, I've got no idea how it works here. Like
it's a bit of a mess, it seems.
I know I've got insurance. I've not used it yet. I've got the card in my wallet, so hopefully I don't need to use it. But so now I'll just talk about Australia and not New Zealand. But Australia has a really good public health system, and most of the genetic counselling services are public. So we have a good public health system. We've got a good genetic service. People can be seen and it's covered by the government. I guess the only thing is the waiting time can be quite long. So some people are choosing to have private genetic counselling where they have to pay for it themselves, but they can be seen much sooner.
And any idea how long that wait time could be? Is it kind of like a month or two, or you're talking more 6, 7, 8 months?
Yeah, I guess it depends on which state, but I think if you called up and got an appointment within 6 months, you'd be doing pretty well. You know, sometimes the waiting time can be over a year. And I guess it just depends on what the reason for the referral. So obviously if it's prenatal or, you know, like it's treatment focused, they will try and see you a bit sooner. But if it's kind of just a standard presentation, yeah, sometimes people have to wait a long time, and that's not such a good thing.
And that makes private practice so appealing to patients to be able to get an appointment quickly and probably a little bit more of timing that they want. They don't have to be like you're assigned a time, I would imagine. Are there other genetic counselors in Australia that are developing their own private practice, or are you like the trailblazer there?
Well, there are a handful of people that have decided to open private practices. And I guess, you know, I was a bit of a trailblazer.
Give yourself a title. I love it.
And for so long, I had thought about it and I just thought it would never work. Like I'm a positive, optimistic person, but I just thought no one will pay for this. You know, people will want to be seen publicly. No one will pay for testing when they can get it publicly. And I guess that's just what private health is. It caters to the people that are willing to pay and that are happy to pay for that convenience. So my private practice, you know, most of the clients that I saw was on a Saturday, so it was sort of out of normal business hours, and my waiting time was about a week or so. So I could see people really quickly.
That's fantastic.
For some people in the community, that was what they wanted and they were happy to pay for that. So I feel like I was really lucky.
And so if someone in Australia is going through the public health system, then was that genetic counseling and genetic testing, because it is kind of two different aspects, was that 100% covered by whatever insurance system or like whatever Australia has in place? Or is it kind of like, oh, we're going to cover this percent, or you still have to kick in some money from the patient's wallet?
No. So if you have a Medicare card, so either you're Australian or, you know, you've immigrated to Australia and you've got a special visa or whatever, you get a Medicare card. And if you've got a Medicare card, you can access public health. So, you know, if you have an emergency, you can go to accident and emergency at the hospital. You can, you know, you can have all of those health services. And if it's appropriate, it's all covered. So, you know, if you meet criteria for testing, like if you have a strong family history of breast cancer and you've just been diagnosed and you meet the criteria for testing, the appointment and the genetic testing will be covered. But if you're there and you say, oh, well, while I'm here, can you test me for heart disease because my best friend's mum just died of a heart attack and I just want testing, that won't be covered.
And so those requirements, is that part of something that Australia has themselves, or do they follow something like in the US we have the NCCN if we're talking about in the cancer world? And so we follow those guidelines, and if people meet the guidelines, that's what insurance will then kind of kick in. And there's, I'm very simplifying it, but having those guidelines, does Australia have their own, or is it following what other countries are doing?
Yeah, so in the cancer setting, you know, I'm familiar with NCCN guidelines, and we do have something similar in Australia and New Zealand. It's called EVIQ, and I was actually on the EVIQ committee for familial cancer.
Oh, wow.
So we sort of looked at guidelines from overseas, you know, from what people were doing in North America and what people were doing in Europe, and we kind of wrote our own for Australia and New Zealand. But yeah, so I guess the answer is yes. So I think each hospital or each state or as a nation, we kind of think about what the criteria are. And so then it should be fair and uniform across the place, but that's not always the case. But yeah, whatever the presentation is, when you go to a genetics appointment, it should be clear what criteria people need to meet to qualify for government-funded testing.
And have you seen this in other countries? I know you've been to quite a few where you've been speaking at and in other areas that you've been able to visit in your career. Have you seen any other, either with this or other just major changes that are different from Australia or the US?
I guess the thing that kind of stood out for me in my travels across the world with, you know, sort of genetic counseling is sort of the issue with diversity. So practicing as a genetic counselor in Australia, access to testing and services wasn't such an issue as I think it is here in America. And, you know, navigating insurance and, you know, genetic counselors in America spend a lot of time doing insurance things, whereas that's just not the case in Australasia. So I guess the biggest difference or the thing that kind of stood out for me was kind of diversity or the lack of diversity in genetic counsellors across the world. But I guess that is a bit of a special interest of mine. So maybe that's why it kind of resonates with me.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point in that, you know, we need to have more diversity. That's always such a push. And with genetic counsellors in the U.S. spending so much time kind of battling with insurance companies and just having to advocate and say, my patient needs this for XYZ, and to be able to do that. And I wonder if that's going to shift in our field of having more genetic counseling assistants be able to take on some of those roles so that genetic counselors really can focus on what we're trained for, which is helping patients directly and not talking to insurance companies so much. I mean, some genetic counselors will have a company or a subsection of a hospital that deals with the insurance company. I feel like those are great jobs to have because you can focus on the patients. But yeah, I wonder if that is going to shift in the near future.
Yeah, I wonder as well. Like I've seen, like I work with two fabulous genetic counseling assistants, and the job they do is just amazing. I'm not sure how much of their time is spent dealing with insurance issues, but I think that it's exciting where our profession is evolving. And, you know, what genetic counsellors did 30 years ago is quite different to what they did 15 years ago, which is different to now. And, you know, times are changing. I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's exciting just to see like where we're going with it. And that I think we didn't even have GCAs, as far as I know, until recently, that's kind of a newer role that prospective genetic counselors can step into to really get a better sense of the role and prepare for grad school and hopefully get into grad school. And that's awesome that you work with two GCAs. That sounds like an awesome setup.
Yeah, and even just that is different from in Australia. Like in Australia, I think that genetic counselling assistants, that role or that title has existed for maybe 3 or 4 years. And really the only way to become a GCA is to be a genetic counselling student. So if you're a full-time student, you can work or the university advises that you only work 2 days a week. So then genetic clinics are hiring students to be GCAs for 2 days a week.
In the US, it's a little bit different of you can step into that role having not much experience, not being in grad school. And it's interesting because in the US, when you're a student, you cannot be paid for being in a clinical rotation that's going towards your graduate degree. If you are a GCA, I guess, on the side and it's not part of your degree, that's fine as far as I'm aware. I'm not in that role, so I'm not sure. But there's a very clear line. You cannot get paid for work towards a graduate degree, which I also am like, that could change the future.
And I mean, that's the same in Australia as well. If you like, you need to do placements, and if you're a GCA, then your work is not counted as a placement. So that is quite separate. But yeah, it's just interesting that in Australia and in America, there are these job titles called genetic counselling assistants, but what they do is slightly different.
And so your new role now, you're in the US and you have a new role at Baylor Genetics as a clinical science liaison. What does that mean? It's kind of a word and a new role that we hear, and a lot of people are like, I don't really know exactly what they do.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I feel really lucky that I was able to get this job and to work in such a fabulous role here in the States. I'm nearly 40, and I never thought I would ever live and work overseas.
It's
And
a big
then
move.
it is a big move. And then yeah, to be able to get such a fabulous job. Like, I've been a clinical genetic counselor for 15 years. I've been board certified for 10. And I guess, like, a theme in Australia is for the more senior people, where is career progression going? Like, do you want to get into management? Do you want to get into research? Do you just want to stay clinical and sort of do the same thing? And I kind of felt like I was ready for a change. And then in America, I feel like we're probably, I don't know, a few years ahead, sort of what's happening elsewhere. And there's this great new role that is sort of being created a number of years ago, either called a clinical science liaison or a medical science liaison. And a lot of genetic testing companies or medical or pharmaceutical companies are recruiting senior genetic counselors into this role. So they want people that have got clinical experience and good kind of years of experience in genetic counseling, but to kind of change direction a little bit. So it's working with the sales team, and part of the role is to educate and to help the sales team understand the nuances of genetic testing. But it's also to go along with the sales team on sales calls. So there's actually a genetic counselor in the room, working on behalf of the genetic testing company when they're meeting, the genetics clinics.
And you had a good point there of your clinical background being such a great tool and experiences to pull from. I'm sure when you're talking to people that are ordering this testing, when you're going on those sales calls and trips, so that if someone asks you a question, you'd be like, well, yeah, actually, as a genetic counselor, I did order tests like this, and I would choose between A and B. And I'm sure that's been really advantageous to be able to pull from.
And I didn't quite realize how beneficial that experience actually was, and I sort of took it for granted. And when I think about it, not everybody has that experience. Or it's a really fabulous role for genetic counselors that are a bit more senior, that are looking for something a little bit different. It's an excellent opportunity to sort of do something a little bit different, and to sort of, it's a step up. So it's good for career progression as well.
Yeah, I think that's one aspect of genetic counseling that sometimes, even I looking at like, okay, will I be with patients for this many years? Like, I'm very goal oriented of, okay, what's my next thing? What am I working towards? And so it's nice that this new role has kind of popped up in our field to be able to give us that option to say, oh, if I do want to change tracks a little bit, I can start doing this other type of education where you're not educating patients anymore, but you're really educating the people ordering the test. Who's included in that? I mean, I'm picturing you talking to other genetic counselors, other doctors in there. Who are the people you're educating?
It's the people in the hospitals or the genetics clinics or the medical clinics that are ordering the tests. So they could be genetic counselors, or they could be nurses, they could be doctors. The practice managers may be involved with the education. They may have other allied health people. So I must just admit I haven't been in the job too long, so I'm still learning myself. But I think sort of on your point is it wasn't that long ago that when you finished your genetic counselling training, it was either get a clinical job or that was it. And now it's like, you know, you can go clinical, you can go into research, you can go into academia, you can go into industry, you know, like it's really varied.
Yeah, possibilities are really, really endless. Like that's just the types of jobs. And then you get into the different specialties of each of those. It's like this crazy web that we're talking about. And for when I talk to, you know, classmates and other people in the field about, you know, this role of clinical science liaison, I think one of the things that we talk about most and wonder is like, well, what does an average day look like? Are you just like on the phone with a lot of people? Or are you constantly traveling to other places? Like what does a day or maybe a week look like for you?
Yeah, so I'm the only CSL in my company. So I am employed to be a product matter expert in all of our tests and cover all the territories in the world. So
wow.
It's a big role. I know that there are other companies where they employ a number of CSLs that kind of specialize either in different territories or with different products or tests in their company. I am lucky enough to be able to work from home. So I live in New Jersey, whereas the headquarters of my office is in Texas. So most of the time, a lot of the time I'm working from home, and so I've got my laptop and my mobile phone, and I'm on Skype, and I can, you know, people at work can put calls through to me, and people don't really realize that I'm not in the office. So part of my role is actually working as a lab genetic counselor. So there are a number of genetic counselors that are lab genetic counselors at my workplace. So that's probably about 20% of my role, whereas 80% is the CSL. And with the CSL, we have a number of salespeople that live across the United States. And I might spend a couple of days every week or so with different salespeople. So at the start of the week, I might travel to one part of the country and go on sales calls. And then at the second half of the week, I'll be back home working from home.
So it sounds like a pretty good mix of being able to work from home and have, you know, the flexibility to be able to do that during the day and then spice it up with different trips throughout the month and everything.
Yes, I feel extremely lucky. So yeah, it's very good.
And before we close out, I wanted to ask what kind of concepts you're usually talking about during these calls, if there's a couple misconceptions that maybe you're explaining, or what the focus is, or maybe a frequently asked question that you get a lot.
I mean, that's a good question. And I feel like I haven't been in the role too long to be able to answer that.
Yes, I'm putting you a bit in the hot seat there.
Well, I think just it's just to be across everything. Like, so the company that I work for, we have lots of different tests. So we have cancer tests, we've got prenatal tests, we've got cardiac, you know, so we cover basically all areas of clinical genetics, including biochemistry and metabolic testing as well. So although in my 15 years of clinical experience, I've got, you know, I'm a really good generalist and I've got experience in many different areas. I guess the challenge is to be across all of those areas. And, you know, I can't know all information and have it all on the top of my head, but to kind of have like a general understanding of every single part of the business and to be able to know where to access that information, I guess that's sort of what I'm working on at the moment.
Yeah, the being resourceful is very helpful in genetic counseling, because if you know how to use the internet, you can find the answer, as long as you have that base knowledge to be able to understand what you're reading and everything.
That's what we're good at.
Yes, definitely. And being able to point patients to say, oh, this is a really good resource for you to look into as well. And being able to tie all of that together. And it's I think it's very cool. Thank you so much for coming on the show to be able to share your experience, especially now being able to have the experience of working in both Australia and the US to start making those comparisons and seeing where we're going with the field and where we've come from. And it's an exciting time to be in genetics. I feel like I say that most episodes, but it doesn't get old. It really doesn't.
Oh, well, I'm glad that you've said that, because I feel like I say that every episode on my podcast as well. So I would love to interview you on my podcast, and maybe we should wait a little while so you're in the field working, maybe, and we can kind of go back over some of the stuff that we've covered today.
Yeah, that sounds great. We'll reconvene once I have a little more experience under my own belt. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much.
Hope you all enjoyed hearing from Matt. He's such a lovely person to have on the show. If you are looking to hear more from DNA Today, you can go to dnapodcast.com. I have over 100 episodes on the website, and I have so many that I don't think they're all now listed in Apple and Spotify. So you can check out all over 100 episodes and lots of more information on dnapodcast.com, including the show notes for today's episode. And if you're on Twitter, you can check me out at DNA Podcast, on Instagram, a little different, at DNA Radio. And any questions you have for myself or Matt or anything about the show in general, you have a question, you have a comment, you have a concern, send it into info@dnapodcast.com. There's also a contact form on the website. So if you can't remember all this, dnapodcast.com has all of this information. And I do have one small favor to ask of you. Please help me start the year off strong. Rate and review the show on Apple or wherever you listen to the podcast. It really, really helps the podcast get to new audiences, have many more downloads. And so really appreciate if you can take 2 minutes out of your day, even pause the episode right here and go and rate and review on Apple or whatever podcast player you listen to this on. Hope you all are enjoying the new year. Thanks for listening. And join me next time to learn and discover new advances in the world of genetics.
And me, the genes of you, and you're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.